This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills, and also by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at biggreenegg.com and springermountainfarms.com.
Hey, we're here at Heritage Radio Network live at Charleston Wine and Food Fest. You guys join in. Tell me where we're at, boys.
We're at Charleston Wine and Food 2017.
Wait, what are your guys' names?
I'm Carrie.
Lauren.
I'm Robert.
Robert Stelling.
And I'm Kat Johnson.
So this is kind of a live fun thing. We're still going live. We've been here, what, for 3 days or 4 days now, Kat?
We've been here for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we want to thank our sponsors, Big Green Egg and Springer Mountain Farm, for bringing us down.
Woo! And HeritageRadioNetwork.org. If you're listening, you're listening live now. So we're happy to be here in Charleston. So you guys, what do you guys do? So Robert, you're kind of a culinary legend around these parts.
Yeah, I'm a classic.
So he actually has a job and he runs a restaurant, right?
Yeah. A job I can't quit.
Hominy Grill and what? What's the street it's called?
It's on Rutledge Avenue.
So you guys have been to his place, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Many times.
And what do you think? What are some dishes you like when you go there?
Huevos Rancheros.
I second that as well.
Yeah, huevos are great.
And you hosted a great breakfast today, didn't you, for some festival goers?
Yeah, we had the Heritage crew over. They did a little number and chopped into the food there. So
some shrimp and grits.
It was impressive.
But guys, everybody cheers. Got a lot of backstory of you. You know, Patrick Martin's our founder, and you know, you went back to working with Bill Neal way back in the old days, right?
Yeah, I started my career with Bill at Crook's Corner. A long, long time ago.
Yeah. So we should cut. This is a trivia. You know, we got some prizes out there. Beers from Westbrook and some T-shirts.
You guys get beer just for participating.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Westbrook Groza. Mount Pleasant. So you want to go into the questions, Kat? Let's go.
I do. Okay. So question one.
It's about Charleston.
Round one is all about Charleston.
Got it.
You might have an advantage here.
Don't give me too much credit.
Okay. Question number one.
And back, talking to the mic, too.
Back in the day, sea captains would announce their arrival and invite people to hear their stories by sticking what fruit prominently outside their homes? Pineapple.
Yes.
Yay. Correct.
Yay. Where's the bell? Ring the bell. David, where's the bell? Okay, louder.
Ding.
All right, next one.
Okay, question number two. Who was Charleston named after?
King Charles.
The
second.
Correct.
All right. Of what country, though?
That lesser one across the sea.
Yeah. So he also, Charles gave this land to 8 of his friends, but named it for himself. Okay. Question number 3. What modern film, adapted from a play written by Shakespeare, was entirely shot in Charleston?
That's news to me, too.
Okay, it came out in 2001, and starred Julia Stiles and Josh Hartnett.
Say it, she said it.
Othello?
Othello.
What is Othello?
We accept
yes.
it.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to give you credit for it. The movie was named O, but it was based on Othello and was set in an American high school.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I have my I'm a spontaneous question. Okay, the park that we're in right now, what's it called?
Marion Square.
Marion Square. It was the former parade grounds for which school?
The Citadel.
All right. And why is it no longer the parade ground?
I guess they got too big for, I don't know. They had to.
Citadel moved, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. I have another question coming up about Marion Square later.
Rock Citadel's the hotel
okay.
now.
Yeah.
Question number 4. True or false? Charleston was the first city in America to have a theater. I think that's true.
True.
Dock Street. Good instinct. She's good.
Dock Street, right?
Yeah.
Dock Street Theater.
Good job.
Dock Street.
Good job.
Before we do that, like Robert, some history from your part. When did you open your restaurant? Hominy Grill.
I opened in 1996.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
There it is.
Who's been there, Hominy Grill? Good people.
Can we get a ding-ding?
Yeah, baby. All right. Keep it rolling.
Okay, question number 5. True or false? The first golf game in the U.S. was played in Charleston.
Can you repeat the question?
The first golf game was in the United States was played in Charleston.
I'm going to
Softball question.
50-50 chance. I'm going
to go no. I'll say false, too.
It's true.
Yeah, I agree. Oh.
It's true. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a question. Come on.
I just wanted to hear the horn, okay?
Harleston
Green. Did you get these
Green.
Questions from a carriage tour?
You like the buzzer better or
what?
The bell?
Did you get the questions from a carriage tour?
No, I didn't take the carriage tour.
What is the carriage tour, Robert? Tell us.
You get a lesson in Charleston lore. You take a carriage tour around and see the houses and the gardens and everything wonderful. And
wow. You know, I got to come back and take a tour.
It just seems like the golf would be a really important part of that.
Yeah.
You guys play golf?
Vaguely.
Not really.
Not really.
Not at the Wine and Food Festival.
Okay, well, that was the first round, and you guys did a really good job.
Yes.
So,
are we keeping score, or what are we doing?
No, we're just giving away things, because we just like to be generous.
Yeah,
you get
free
Heritage
stuff.
Radio Network stickers.
You guys, come up if you want free stickers. Come on.
Yeah.
Woo. Next one. Southern drinks is the next category.
Oh, God.
We like the drinks. Robert, what is your beverage program like in Hominy Grill? What do you guys have? Wine, beer, liquor?
We do all three, the big three. Wine, beer, and liquor.
Is there a signature drink that you like to drink?
We run special. Oh, that I like to drink? I'm a Negroni drinker.
I like Negronis.
Yeah.
I was at the Prohibition Bar last night, and they made the Mezcal Negroni, which seems to be, is that our studio, Roberta's in Brooklyn? And down in Charleston, it seems everyone is hip, right? Who likes Mezcal Negronis? Go
I'll
to Prohibition
one.
Bar. They have them, yeah. All right.
Next round?
Southern drinks. Go for it.
This round is Southern drinks. Okay. Question number one. What famous cocktail was originally the morning drink of choice for farmers in Virginia? I'll give you a clue.
That's what I was looking for.
It became the official drink of the Kentucky Derby in 1938. Mint julep.
All right. Woo.
Got it.
That's what I was going to guess.
Is that a Charleston drink, though? Do people drink that here? Mint julep?
People drink everything in Charleston.
Yeah. It's on the list. But
when I was walking around the Culinary Village, I heard one chef talking about a drink he was making. He was like, bourbon and bees and jalapeno, and he kept going into it. I mean, do you feel like here people are more creative you get with a cocktail? People want to try that?
What's important in Charleston is that it's bourbon to begin with.
Bourbon?
So, yes.
Like she likes it.
I'll second that.
Big Daddy Bourbon was the thing.
Is bourbon in my coffee today or what? No.
You didn't bring enough.
That's the line from Charleston. You didn't bring enough, right? If you didn't.
Okay, question number two. What soft drink claims to be the oldest continuing soft drink company still run by the same family?
Cheerwine?
That's right.
How did you know that?
They're a partner of the festival this
year. Are they really?
They are.
Get the idea
of the sponsor.
I'm not from the South.
All about plugging the sponsors.
You gotta go over to the Hub. I bet you can still
What does it taste like?
It's kind of like a little, I don't know, I would compare it like Dr. Pepper-ish.
Kind of, yeah.
With a little cherry on top. Yeah.
Cherry Coke cherry, and Dr. Pepper.
Do you make a drink with it, or you just drink it straight? What would you mix it with? Bourbon?
Bourbon.
Yeah.
It goes well with barbecue,
Chew
too.
And bourbon.
Okay, question number three. What ubiquitous Southern drink was first published in 1879 in a community cookbook called Housekeeping in Old Virginia by Marion Cable Tyree?
Ubiquitous.
It's
children, old ladies.
Old fashioned?
Maybe there's no alcohol.
Yeah.
Love that buzzer. Now, this is like our fifth hour program
today.
This is
for today. Children?
Kind of, how long you guys been here? You've been here for 3 or 4 days already?
Yeah.
We're stretching it, but we're loving it.
Yeah.
Not an old fashioned.
Okay, secret. What's the hint, Kat?
The hint is the original recipe called for green tea. But then after the war, we only had black tea.
Close.
It's sweet tea.
Sweet tea.
Sweet tea.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
I was just putting all the clues together.
Is that what you drink here?
I'm not a huge
I didn't know
tea
somebody drink. Invented that.
Maybe they published a recipe.
I thought that was from like dawn of time.
It's people. What's it called when you take
over? There was any other
what's
kind
it called
of sweet
when you
tea.
Take over someone else's history.
Appropriation.
She appropriated someone's history. I don't like that. But do you serve sweet tea at Hominy Grill?
Yeah.
How do you make
course.
Sweet tea?
You keep adding sugar until your teeth crack.
I was telling Katie that when you make a pitcher of sweet tea, you put like 2.5 cups of sugar in it. And she just, her mind was blown.
Oh, Kat, your family's from Alabama, right?
Yeah.
And you guys actually made a cane yeah, syrup.
My
sugar,
dad
right?
makes cane syrup out of purple yeah. ribbon cane.
And then would you make yeah. that in sweet tea or not?
No, you would mostly, well, I like to use that syrup for like cocktails.
And what about sweet tea? Would you put bourbon in it? No?
Yes.
An yeah, exception? I do that.
Firefly.
I do
for
that.
You, that's an exception?
Only ice.
Ah.
Sweet tea you drink if you get caught needing a beverage between coffee and bourbon.
It's a transitional drink.
Exactly.
It's ubiquitous.
All right, next it's one. Ubiquitous. What's next?
Okay, question number four. What is the state drink of Louisiana? A hurricane? No.
I'd say hurricane too, but...
This is a tricky one.
Well, it's actually, there's hints here.
It's also the state drink.
I can see the hints. Yeah. Nobody else can.
It's also the state drink of Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee.
That's weird.
Think like along the lines of what lobbying groups would want a state drink to be.
What comes from a cow, kids?
Milk.
Milk?
That's kind of
right.
boring. Sorry, kids.
But
is there a state drink with actually a state spirit?
Only Alabama has a state spirit. It's yep. Konica Ridge whiskey.
Wow. That's
who
the
would
only
have
state.
Thought?
That's good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What would the state spirit
they're
be of South Carolina?
In front.
Probably bourbon.
Bourbon.
Yep.
All right, keep going.
Okay, question number five. What punch originated in Savannah and, according to legend, was once served to George Washington? This is a hard one.
A punch?
It is a punch.
It's an army-related name. These are tough questions, Kat.
Yeah.
Where'd you pull these off? The internet?
Yeah, I've made this punch before, actually.
Have you?
And it's delicious.
You make it with your family's cane syrup?
Yeah, I did put a little bit of it in there. So the answer is Chatham Artillery Punch.
Yeah, yeah. Not even close.
Have you ever heard of that?
it's so
good. What would you
good.
Make that with?
So bourbon? The one I made has bourbon, cognac, brand, like a bunch of different stuff. Green tea, you steep the green tea, and then you put the syrup in it.
You know, since I'm getting thirsty, where should we go after the festival tonight to get some good cocktails? You guys tell me.
Oh, my goodness.
Pick a spot. Where?
I don't know.
We're getting a lot of Edmonds Oast love.
All right, Edmonds Oast.
Going with Edmonds Oast. That's a good spot. It's a beautiful day.
Edmonds Oast.
Sit out on the patio.
What about you, Robert?
Edmonds Oast sounds good. It's in my neighborhood.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
What about, all right, overwhelming. I guess they all win.
Okay.
Need a bell for that, David.
So, you guys did a great job on the drinks round. So, for your beers, I'm going to give you Heritage Radio Network koozies. Also, we may run out of prizes before the end of the game.
Y'all are enough of a prize.
Aww.
Well, like that, we'll give a free breakfast at Harmony Grill next. That's what we'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knows. Let's keep going on this.
Okay, the next round is Southern food.
Bill might have an advantage on this.
Yeah.
Hopefully so.
You have a phone a friend, I think.
Yes.
Okay, first question. What Southern sandwich staple actually got its start with New York State farmers?
More specific. It might be used as a dip.
Pimento cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
Wow, what's the background on that, Kat?
Well, New York State farmers were the first ones to make that, and they were modeling it after the French Neufchâtel.
Neufchâtel. All right.
Yeah.
Do you serve pimento cheese at Harmony Grill?
Oh, yes, most
How
certainly.
How do you serve it?
You have a sandwich on the pretzel roll with fried shallots. And
Yeah,
it's great.
And what about, like, cream cheese and some kind of jam? Is that something that's popular, too?
Harmony Grill has really good cream cheese. Y'all have really good jelly.
Yeah, yes. We have great jelly.
Jelly and cream cheese.
Oh, yeah.
All right, next
Okay,
one.
Question number two. What popular southern cake is made with pineapples, banana, pecans, and cream cheese icing?
Is
it a hummingbird cake?
Yes!
Yes, that is the hummingbird. Wow.
I wrote that question after our breakfast this morning because I had hummingbird cake.
Yeah.
So good.
And what's the backstory on that?
It's thought to have been invented in Jamaica, but the first printed recipe appeared in Southern Living magazine, and it is the most requested recipe in the magazine's history.
See, the appropriate Jamaican history. Look at that.
There you go.
Bananas. Actually, my place in New York City, Jimmy's number 43, the main cook from Colombia makes his bread pudding. He sneaks in bananas. So bananas are good for baking.
Sounds delicious.
Have you used bananas in any of your baking?
Yeah, we were doing banana pancakes today.
Oh, that sounds good.
With pecan praline.
What does it do? It just gives a little more
butter
moisture.
Whip.
Butter whip?
Yeah, butter whip.
Nice.
Do you let the bananas get like really brown before you use them?
Yeah. Especially for banana bread. We also have banana bread, so and that's very much a Caribbean style recipe.
What's your favorite food, guys, since you're here?
Oh my gosh.
It shouldn't be a question.
There's no, I don't know.
I'll fall on the sword and answer first. Pizza, for sure.
Pizza?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I have to choose. It depends on the day.
All right, next question.
There's too many options in Charleston.
So let's say something. She's gonna say bourbon.
No, I actually eat.
You eat too. You're gonna come up here. One more question. You're coming up. All right, next one.
Okay, question number three. In the South, eating Hoppin' John on New Year's Day is thought to bring a prosperous year filled with luck. What are the peas in the dish meant to represent?
You go. You get this one. Isn't it wealth?
It's
coins.
I'll accept that.
I thought it was health.
Coins. Yeah. We also eat collard greens. Collard greens is the folding money, and the peas are the coins.
Nice.
What are collard greens?
The folding money.
Oh, folding money.
Yeah. Green.
All right.
We call it folding money, Jimmy.
I'm not sold on that one, but do you like that dish? Do you like, what is it?
Hoppin' John?
You like Hoppin' John? You like it's like black eyed peas and collard greens or something?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a bean and rice is a whole protein, so it's a great dish, you know, really.
Do you serve that at Harmony Grill?
Yes, we do.
Do you always put pork in it or you make it without pork? Because I would want it with pork.
We do have pork in it, yeah.
Yesterday when I was
at peas with pork.
Edmund's Oast, yeah, I keep calling the same thing. I had the, it was like kind of the slow cooked pole beans. With a little bit of pork. And I said basically it's green and they cook it like collard greens. Is that common technique? All right. Next question. Let's go.
Okay. Question number 4.
I'm trying to stretch the clock on this one. All right, kids.
What traditional southern dish was also the name of a movie starring Kathy Bates?
Who's Kathy Bates?
You know, from Misery. That's not the answer.
What? Good job!
There you go.
From the audience, we had fried green tomatoes.
Oh, she eats fried green tomatoes, drinks
you
bourbon.
Pull her up a seat.
Love that girl.
Okay, cool. And this is the last food question. What state is the largest supplier of crawfish?
Oh, this is a trick question.
Obvious one.
Is it?
Louisiana.
You're right.
All right.
Oh, I thought, okay.
Yeah. What's the backstory?
Crawfish.
I thought that was going to be it. I was like, uh-oh.
I was waiting for the buzzer. I was waiting for the horn.
You mean you're going to say southeastern China? No. Sorry, that's frozen food industry. How much frozen food do you guys buy? You think in Charleston, the best restaurants, are they only using fresh local ingredients? Or for like shrimp and grits, are people bringing in? I'm sorry to bring up real stories of food, but are they bringing in frozen shrimp?
I hope not. There are certainly some, and there's certainly times a year when you can't get anything. But what we do is get local shrimp that are frozen for us, and then when the season's closed, we're using good local
products.
So
you have a shrimp, local shrimp industry here?
Yeah. And occasionally we run out and have to supplement for like a couple weeks until the new season opens.
No, I didn't know that shrimp was native to this region.
No, they're the kind of the crown jewel and the seafood, you know, of Charleston. It's really what we do here. Shrimp, most beautiful.
Ask one more question. So here, what's different? The little neck clams that I had at a raw bar last night. They're really small and tender. Now from the Northeast in the North, they're usually a little bigger. You want to say anything about the type of seafood you have here? What's different about it? I mean, it seems like really special.
Yeah, it is special. We're in a semi-tropical zone here, or subtropical zone, so we're right on the edge, and we get a lot of warm water currents, so it's a change here. You know, a lot of the shellfish start to taste, you know, different as the water gets warmer, you know, below Chesapeake and stuff, so, you know, we get that, although our coastline here is really sandy, so there's not a lot of attractive formations, but there is a huge spawning ground off the coast called the Bumps, about 90 miles out, and it's a big swordfish spawning ground, and a lot of other commercial species are taken out there. So we're lucky to have that kind of productive fishery here. It's really sustainable in a local level, so that's great.
That's great. That's something I learned about Charleston this weekend, Kat.
Yeah.
What's the next question?
Okay, we're on to round four now. This round is about Southern chefs and authors.
Southern chefs and authors.
Okay, this one's an easy one. What is Emeril Lagasse's catchphrase?
Bam.
Bam.
You watch too much TV. Come on.
Okay.
I haven't had any bourbon today.
She's got bourbon. She's got fried green tomatoes. She knows Emeril.
Okay. Question number two.
Wait, where was he born, though?
Emeril was actually born in Massachusetts.
My neck of the woods. Look at that.
Yeah. Okay, question number two. Who is the founder of Anson Mills?
You know Robert.
Glenn Roberts.
That's right. Okay. We also have a fun fact. Glenn is originally from San Diego and studied French horn throughout his childhood.
And then getting deeper.
He's a very interesting guy.
Yeah.
Robert. So I know that Anson Mills is working on different varieties of rice. You want to say anything about that? Some of the rice is native to this region.
Well, Anson Mills, in general, has been really instrumental in preserving a lot of heirloom grains and seeds in general. Not just the rice, but also peas and, farro, all kinds of different grains. And they actually contract people to grow them for them and keep that going. So they've just been really fabulous in that. They have a rice program with our local heritage rice here called Carolina Gold, and it's a nice white rice, really soft though.
Are a lot of chefs in this area, if they serve Anson Mills product, will they put that on the menu, or will they not? Have you seen it on menus a lot?
I think they do a lot here. I don't think it's as much as. In other areas of the country, I've seen it a lot on menus. When I travel, I see it in menus. You know, I've seen it in upstate New York or out on the West Coast. You know, it's great that they're so well known and respected within the industry, and that's because, you know, Glenn Roberts' integrity and just really believes in what he does.
That's great. What's next, Kat?
Okay. What renowned chef of Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, popularized shrimp and grits in the 80s?
Robert knows. Does he work for him?
That was Chef Bill Neal.
Yes.
Yes, Crook's Corner.
And
yes.
I just want to say that when I was doing research yesterday about Charleston, I did read the book by his wife about Bill Neal, so I knew of him. But it's one thing great about being here is thinking about the culinary history of this region. And it's true that, so you worked for Bill at one point, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. I started my career in his dish pit.
What were some of the first dishes you learned how to cook with him?
I remember paella was the first dish that I really learned to cook with him. Crook's Corner in those really early days was a mix of gas station, barbecue joint, and kind of continental fare. So we had asparagus wrapped in country ham with tomato sauce and Italian, and had mozzarella on it. And we did paella and kind of a Mediterranean seafood chowder, kind of a bouillabaisse. And it was very much kind of this European fare because that's the kind of food that he had been cooking at La Residence. And he started to write his cookbook. He began to focus on his Southern roots. So that's when it all kind of changed.
Cheers to Bill Neal. If anybody, all right. Next question.
Okay, question number four. What state was Edna Lewis born in?
Ooh. Hint. It's north of South Carolina, but not directly north.
She was born in Virginia.
That's right.
Freedom, Virginia, I believe.
All right.
Yes.
Good bell, double bell.
Freetown.
Yes.
You know, I like bourbon, but geography questions always win in my mindset. It's kind of like the easy grade, right?
I'm glad he's on our team.
They used to teach geography in schools. I don't know if they do anymore. In fact, my daughter's name is Georgia. And coming down, she said, Daddy, I want to go to Georgia, the country. But she still doesn't believe there's Georgia, the state. So, I don't know.
All right, question number 5. What is the name of John T. Edge's forthcoming book, A Personal History of Southern Food? It's coming out in May.
Have you guys ever heard of him?
Oh, yeah.
Who is he?
John T. Edge of the Southern Foodways Alliance.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are you part of that? Robert, have you been part of that?
Yes, yes. I'm a dues-paying member. I'm currently paid up, I believe. I don't know what the title of his new book is.
It is The Pot Liquor Papers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So keep an eye out for that. I think it's going to be good.
I'm surprised it didn't have cornbread in the title.
Right.
You know, talking about Southern Foodways Alliance, I mean, you guys as your industry consumers, if I said Southern Foodways Alliance, would you perk up and say, wow, that must be interesting?
I work for the festival, so I've definitely, yeah. we work with them on some of
our I only events. Say because whenever they do podcast awards, they always win, so.
I would say
we're trying to get in there with them, but.
Well, I think what they do has a lot of integrity, and you know, their motivation is in preserving the Southern food heritage, but also kind of celebrating and exploring it as it's develops now. So, I mean, that's.
And how much you guys think, so we're here in Charleston, these questions are about the South. The South is big. You guys really feel like Charleston, Lowcountry, is uniquely different than the rest of the South? Or do you guys think that, what do you think you guys have in common as the South?
I think there's unique characteristics for every region. I think, you know, we've kind of got a little more of a coastal,
loud music,
home cooking flair. But I think the South has certain things in common, and then the region have their own, the things that they're kind of known for.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different micro regions in the South, the Appalachians, you know, the Piedmont area, you know, a lot of it's geography based, just like Charleston, the Low Country, you know, but this was a really wealthy port early on, so we had a lot of fun imported ingredients and influences in our diet here, so it makes it an exciting place to cook and the food really interesting.
Great, so that was the end of round 4.
Is there one more question for that?
For round 4?
We have another round?
Yeah, I have another round.
Okay.
But that was the end of round 4, and that was about chefs and authors, so I'm going to give them a pot holder.
Awesome. Ooh. Now I'm going to ask, this is the general question. Maybe our bourbon friend knows this. Does anyone know what Carolina Muddle is? It's a dish. Carolina Muddle?
What's that?
Sounds like,
what is it?
It's from the Bill Neal era. You know what it is. He wants to know.
Yeah, muddle is a seafood stew, coastal seafood stew. Here in South Carolina, it's the same sort of dish. It's called pine bark stew.
Is it similar to frogmore stew?
No. Frogmore is more of a kind of like a crawfish boil with shrimp. So there's no real stew involved. It's, you eat it off newspapers. Everything comes out of a pot, potatoes, corn. Muddle is and pine bark stew is tomato, onion, bacon, potato, and fish. And they used to cook it along the rivers when fish migrated upstream to spawn. They'd roll these big cauldrons out and build fires underneath them, layer all the ingredients in there, and have a big community party out by the coast. And it would get kind of burned, and that would be the pine bark reference. And a muddle is another kind of local term for it in North Carolina.
I read, because I know in 2007 you were one of the chefs that, you know, honoring Bill Neal in 2007, a number of Southern chefs went up to James Beard House in New York City. You guys cooked some of his classic dishes, and that's where I learned about Carolina muddle. But what were some of the dishes that you guys cooked, or that you would still say, oh, this is a Bill Neal dish that I want people to know about now?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff at Hominy is Bill Neal dishes, things like the cornbread or recipes that came from there. And, you know, our famous shrimp and grits is actually the you know, I learned there. So those are, you know, really kind of, you know, direct tie to Bill Neal dishes. Yeah.
All right. What's next, Kat?
All right, last round. You might have an advantage here because this is about the festival.
Oh. What those? Hey, boys, from the Frogmore Stew. You guys want to come up and answer questions?
Sure.
Come on, you want some prizes. Come on.
Okay, as they come up. Uh-oh. Question number 1. What company that makes Kamado-style charcoal grills? They're already drinking. I hope they're over 21. Okay.
You got wristbands.
What company that makes Kamado-style charcoal grills is based in Atlanta?
Big Green Egg.
That's right.
Event sponsor here. Look at that.
Yes. It's one of our sponsors.
We
and
love Big Green Egg.
A lot of people that we've talked to this weekend talk about how addictive Big Green Eggs are. And
they have a cult following.
The name, yeah, cult following for sure. The name given to Big Green Egg enthusiasts is Eggheads.
Yes.
Wait, so you guys, boys, you guys are laughing about Frogmare Stew. So give them the mic for a second. What's so funny about Frogmare Stew? You guys can say your name, Stew, and where you're from.
I'm Will from Mount Pleasant.
Hi, I'm Finn Lloyd. I'm from Brooklyn, New York City, and I've heard it sounds amazing. I wasn't actually laughing about it. It just sounds amazing. I definitely want to try it before I leave.
He's laughing.
Also, Brog Rice. I've heard is very good as well.
He's laughing. He's laughing because it sounds so absurdly good.
It sounds very good.
That it's unfathomable.
Pastor Frank.
Hi, my name is Frank Nolan. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Ooh.
And what was the dish you
said? D-Wolves!
Bog rice.
What is that?
It is a big pot of rice. It's kind of similar to risotto in that you keep adding liquid to it as it cooks, so it comes out very kind of loose. And you get a really rich broth, but it has sausages, and you know it picks up whatever's in the refrigerator, you know, shrimp,
what
chicken.
What rice would you use with that, Robert?
I use a Carolina Gold rice, which is the heirloom seed for the one we do in the restaurant. So the rice is really soft, so it pops and gets fluffy and a really unique texture, not like a risotto at all. It's just a very similar technique.
Sounds good. Have you had it before?
Frogmore Stew?
No, what's the other one? The new one.
Bog rice.
It sounds delicious.
I know, right?
Definitely.
Right, let's go.
Okay. Question number two.
Geography.
What are the four streets that border Marion Square, where we are right now at the Culinary Village?
All right. You're going to go? All right.
All right. Hold the mic close.
Yeah. King Street.
Calhoun.
I don't know Vanderhorst. Vanderhorst.
No.
Oh, Houston. Houston.
From here, Will.
And meeting.
All right.
You're close. It's actually not Houston. It's Hudson.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. All right. Sit down, guys. Relax.
Hudson,
okay.
Houston, whatever.
Okay. Fun fact, Marion Square is named for Francis Marion, a.k.a. the Swamp Fox. He was considered one of the fathers of modern guerrilla warfare.
Wow.
I didn't know that. What? Okay. Question number three.
That's very appetizing.
Yeah. What family-owned business has been raising chickens for over 40 years in the hills of northeast Georgia? Hint, they're behind
Springer Mountain Farms.
Gino's right here, buddy.
They're one of our sponsors as well.
Yes.
Okay. Question number four.
It's good chicken.
It is.
It's great chicken.
Question number four. Who was honored with a legacy dinner at this year's Charleston Wine and Food Festival?
I was Danielle Ballou.
From New York City?
That's right.
That.
Yes. It was a lovely
All
dinner.
Right. Did you get to meet him, Robert? Have you met him before?
No, I didn't get to meet him. Not this time.
Next time, I'll make sure the New York City chefs all go to Harmony Grill, man.
Yeah.
We had Danny Meyer come in for brunch the other day.
So I
enjoyed seeing him in again.
Good, buddy.
All right. Last question.
All right.
When was the first Charleston Wine and Food held?
When, buddy?
96.
Ooh, close. 2006.
No. 2005.
Oh, I should know that.
Nice.
I believe.
Good try.
We're in year 12.
Well, to him, yeah. in your lifetime, you've been to all of them, right? I know. Okay. All right.
That wraps up trivia.
Woo!
Kat, well, this is awesome. Thanks for doing this.
Everybody's a winner. Yeah.
Guys, thanks for coming out. Harry's Radio Network. All right, rock on. Robert, a few last words about Charleston and food.
Well, this is a really unique town and has a really great food scene here. You know, it's a great place to visit. All the restaurants, a lot going on.
Are you still cooking, too? Are you actually in the kitchen?
Oh, yeah, every day. I'm behind a pot of soup.
So what's cooking right now? I'm hungry. What should I eat tonight?
We are closed tonight. So I can tell you, hopefully nothing's cooking.
Well, my son is coming.
Yeah.
Unoccupied, yeah.
If it's cooking, it's a little smolder.
I also just want to thank Robert because I think he had a big part in bringing us down to the festival last year. And we had one teepee last year, and this year we have two teepees. We're getting bigger. We did 2 days of broadcast last year. We have 3 days this year. So it's been a really, really fun time at the festival. We hope we get to come back again next year and do it all again.
And tune in every day, heritageradionetwork.org.
That's right.
Yeah, what 10,000 shows already, so.
We hit our 10,000th show last month, and we're going to keep making shows. We're going to shoot for 20 and then 30.
All right.
And I also want to, one last time, thank our sponsors, Big Green Egg and Springer Mountain Farms.
The boys from Mount Pleasant,
thanks
thank
to
you.
Everyone for listening to our broadcasts. And you can also check out all of our interviews that we did as individual podcasts on our website. We interviewed over HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
David, can you close out with some rock and music? Let's go. Music
see
time.
You next
all
year.
Right. Play it up. DJ.
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills. In business since 1974, they've transformed ancient cooking vessels into modern-day masterpieces. Today, they sell 7 sizes of the egg, as well as hundreds of accessories designed to make your cooking fun, entertaining, and delicious. Often copied but never equaled, the Big Green Egg is the ultimate cooking experience. Learn more at biggreenegg.com. This episode is also brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.